panero. Pam, 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 pam. This is Elvis, the Mexican Elvis, on WMBR, Cambridge, 88.1 FM, on your radio dial.
Oye, María, para bailar y gozar, oye mi rumba.
Ay, pero negro, qué sabor tú traes, viejo, por Dios. Oye, estás peligroso.
Y dice...
Ay, si estoy como lo esperaba, viejo.
A los rumberos de ahora, yo les traigo este pregón. Es un poema de rumba y son, rumba buena yo les traigo y a todos les va a gustar. Voy para allá si no me caigo, con la salsa a bailar.
Ritmo sabroso de rumba, mambo afincao, rumba morena. Escucha mi bongo, mi clave y mi güiro.
La rumba no tiene raza, ni frontera, ni color. Lo mismo se baila en casa, que en patio y en corredor. La rumba es lo más sublime que ha creado natura. Por eso va por el mundo con su dulzura.
Todos los rumberos, mira que quieran tocar, que traigan sus cueros, que se pongan a vacilar. Tú ves, ese es un rumbón de ritmo caliente.
Bueno, mi gente, llegó las 7 sin que yo supiera. Look at that. It's all of a sudden 7 o'clock. How did that even happen? I don't understand. But, you know, sometimes these things, they creep up on you like snow falling down upon you. Oh, my goodness. Okay. Anyway, this has been an hour of Sferio all over the map, all over the board. It's been wild and crazy, just like the weather. And hopefully you've enjoyed it a little bit, too, just like the... Oh, yeah, you're probably not enjoying the weather. That's... But, hey, I love it. It's great. It's your gift for being here in New England. And if you're not here in New England, then it's your gift for not being here in New England. Okay, this is WMBR, and we'll be back next Friday from 6 to 7 once again with all sorts of loveliness for you. In the meantime, you
can have the opportunity to calm on down and learn from the beauty of other humans in the wonderful music for human beings. And that will be coming up quite shortly after these commercial messages for you here. See you next week.
They're quite harmless, but they can multiply without warning and assault you. Beware the bad song. Exposing yourself to many bad songs over a prolonged period of time can cause gradual loss of good taste in music. That includes sappy love songs, acoustic versions of loud songs that were good, and Christina Aguilera. Gradual loss of good taste in rock music is a condition that affects 48 million Americans and their families. Left untreated, it can only get worse. A certified Late Risers Club DJ can help you identify good songs and enjoy them. For advice, information, and good punk and rock music, listen to the Late Risers Club here on WMBR 88.1 FM, 10 a.m. to noon, Monday to Friday.
مرحبا من الدكتور جالس السكران. اهلا وسهلا في Music for Human. I am a Dr. Jalis Sakran, and Music for Human here is New Age Talk Radio. Thank you for joining me on this incredible evening. So much wonderful, powdery precipitation outdoors for those of you who are in the wonderful, charming Boston area. As I was making my way through the accumulated snow this evening to the station here, I discovered that much of our communication from one person to the other is not through the, through sound, through what we say to one another. And this is, of course, very relevant because maybe two-thirds of our communication now over the radio is using audio, and only the remaining one-third is using other than audio communication. So in general, when two people are face to face and speaking with one another, there is a lot of communication with the gestures and with the face and facial sort of expressions, and also just like an aura, like one person sort of exudes an energy and causes another person to feel hunger or anger or blueness, whatever that might mean in your culture, or indeed a number of emotions. And all of this would be transmitted through electricity or radiation, or telepathically through the ether. There are many ways that this could be communicated, and very few of them are ways that are, transmittable using the sort of audio medium. So we are left with only a shadow of the normal communication. I'm sure many of you can, if you listen very, very carefully, discern that I am gesticulating wildly at the microphone, but it does not have the impact that it would have if you were 3 or 4 inches from my hand. If you could imagine being that close, you might even find that you are able to understand me without my having to use words at all. Without even understanding the meaning of the words that I am saying to you. Communication could still be possible. And this brings us, of course, to aphasia. A person who is incapable of comprehending words, but can still very often discern the meaning. Try to imagine having a person such as this watching a political speech. Their inability to comprehend the words combined with their very, very sharp ability to comprehend the subtext, the facial expressions, the tone, all that extra communication that is done might lead to a strange, contradictory feeling. But imagine having such a person listen to me on the radio. What sort of meaning could they pick up then? Such a person might find that they understand almost nothing because the words mean nothing to them. They are only sounds. And yet such a person might find that they understand everything. They might find that they understand the tones of my speech more than the words, or that they carry some subconscious understanding. Or some psychedelic telepathic communication would occur with no counterpart in the sound. Yet, someone who is capable of understanding words may find it more difficult to understand if they couldn't hear at all. Even if such a problem were to occur over a very long period of time, they may find that they never regain the ability to understand. With such a person, their ability to comprehend, combined with their inability to perceive, would result in an inability for the two of us to communicate. Hello, you are on the air.
Hi, is Lester Woods there?
No, unfortunately, Lester is trapped in a snow embankment.
Well, I hope he stays trapped there for a while. I have a message for him, and I'd like you to give it to him, and it is this. Last week, I sent a poem to him on an email with the understanding that he would read it and give me credit, because it was my poem, I wrote it. And he proceeded to read it on the air, sure, but he took credit for it. He said it was his poem. So I just wanted to let you guys know, and you might be implicated in this, so you should know. I contacted my lawyer, and he said there's grounds to sue over that for copyright infringement, because I did have the poem patented, and it was actually appeared in a medical journal as one of the more uplifting entries in it. So I just want you to know that you guys better have your credentials and papers together, because I'm going to sue you.
Well, that's certainly a very interesting approach, but is it possible
to... Yeah, it is interesting. So I hope you guys are ready to pay out, $100,000.
Is it possible to communicate with words?
No. No, it's not, because, I take my poetry very seriously, and I feel like if someone's just going to come in and steal my stuff, that's like my apartment being robbed of my heart chakra rug or one of my pianos. And I think it's unconscionable to do something like that for an artist who makes his living, you know, purely through making this poetry. It's like you're taking food from my kids. So.
But how would you communicate that without words? Because what you've given me here is a great number of words, and as a poet, I would think that words would be one of the more favored mechanisms for communication.
Yeah, it is, because I'm a poet.
And
I work with words.
And yet your communication earlier was without words. It was with tones.
It was with poetry, which is made of words.
And with gestures.
No, there were no gestures, actually, because I was talking on the phone.
Well, see, you know, it's just what we've been discussing the entire evening.
I wasn't listening. I just came in to let you guys know that I'm going to sue the pants off of you, and I'm probably going to take...
Well, let me update you. So the idea was that you touch the fingertips of the right V hand, palm facing down, on the palm of upturned left open hand.
Okay.
And that gesture does not generate any compression of air, and it generates no transmission of sound, but it does generate this communication of the concept of fork across a visual medium.
Oh, like spoons.
No, like a fork.
Yeah, like spoons and forks. I understand. I've taken G classes.
Precisely.
Well, all right, what are you talking about?
Well, so earlier we were discussing the oral medium and oral, you know, I'm often
like,
confounded.
Like blowjobs.
No. But like...
I don't get it.
Like oral, like A-U-R-A-L.
I've never been in a spelling class.
So like communication through audio.
Oh. Interesting.
And
go on.
Well, our conclusion was that although conventionally when face-to-face communication is undertaken, as much as 90% of the communication has nothing to do with the words that are actually exchanged. And the evidence of this, which was published in the same medical journal, is the aphasia, victims of aphasia.
Incest.
No, aphasia.
Right, which is cousins, right?
No. Aphasia is a condition where a person is unable to comprehend the meaning of a word, although there is no functional problem with hearing. So it's sort of like a person is perhaps a visual equivalent would be helpful. A person who is able to see clearly, yet is unable to comprehend what he sees. So perhaps he sees a circle, but is unable to recognize it as a circle. So the equivalent of this would sound. So at the moment, I'm making a gesture at the microphone, which is a natural gesture used when complaining. I am tapping the finger of my right hand, which is all the fingers are fully extended and curved against the center of my chest, indicating complaint. Because the material given to us last week to read over the air was very inspirational. But unfortunately, our last caller was not the author. Hello, you are on the air.
Hi. This is me again, and I thought we had hashed out some sort of agreement. We were talking about oral sex and stuff, and then you go right back to the thing that you did last week, which was stealing my ideas and taking my bread from my mouth. And I gotta tell you, you're pissing me off, and now I really am gonna sue you. I'm just gonna throw the book at you. My lawyer has taken a look at the documentation I have. I have the email where I sent you the poem, and I have an email accepted back from you guys that said that you guys loved my poem and you guys wanted to bring me into the studio and talk about it and that I should write a book of poetry. And I have all of that stuff in my Google mails, and my lawyer's seen it, and he said, we're just going to take over the whole place now. I mean, MIT is going to see one of the biggest lawsuits it's seen in a long time, And I just want you to be ready now, because now you've hurt my feelings. I thought we had something going on right there when we were talking about the blowjobs, and then you just break it up. You just break it up. You just go back to the old bullshit.
Oh, dear. Well, we certainly didn't want to offend the caller or cause any mental distress for the caller, but unfortunately we're not permitted to broadcast any obscenities on the air, so we encourage anyone who would like to have their work presented over the air. We would be happy to read it and to of course give appropriate authorship when necessary. To email us at humans@wmbr.org, or if anyone would like to join our plagiarist in speaking, they may call 617-253-8810, and we would be happy to have our operator attempt to connect you.
Hello,
you are on the air.
Yes, I just kind of get where both of you're coming from. Just I've just been kind of grooving to the circle and the waves that were going back and forth. And my thing is that I think we could agree with the caller, but use the words, the tone of the work of blowing. Say the work of blowing, like the wind. And you know, I feel the wind and the moving the snowflakes.
Yeah, that's definitely something that's happening this evening. The hands seem to be feeling something soft. They flutter with the with these sort of fluttering things.
That's right. And I think that the waving of a butterfly wing can affect, you know, the whole vibration of the body.
Well,
if we were just talking and a butterfly fly landed on my nose, it would create the work of the blowing of those delicate wings would just send a chill through me that would stimulate every chakra without words.
Right, like sort of a domino chakra effect.
Yes.
And I mean, like the gesture that comes to mind when you mentioned this, it sort of represents the action of wind blowing. The idea is that I begin with my hands on the left side of the body in the front, and palms facing each other, and fingers pointed forward.
Yes.
And move the hands back and forth in front of the chest with repeated movement, indicating wind.
Yes, that's exactly right. Wow, this show just blows me away. It's the, you know, where you really, on Music for Human Being, you can really hear one hand clapping. Yeah. You can feel it.
That's a very, very apt description. It's very creative. That idea, again, of a gesture without sound.
That's right. And my heart goes out to the caller and his lawyer and his children, it's hard being a wordsmith, because words aren't, we don't really own them. Do I own these words?
Well, they're sort of a collaborative entity. Caller, stay with us. There's another caller on the second line.
Okay.
Caller 8, welcome.
Louis Bungie.
Welcome.
Louis Bungie. Yeah, really great show. Really great. How's everybody doing?
Well, thank you, Mr. Beam. Everything seems to be just very, very smooth this evening.
Mm-hmm. Moulay Bungie.
Moulay Bungie.
Yes, wonderful. Wonderful.
It's so wonderful to have 3 points.
The Rainbow
to the
Beam
circle.
Is on the show. I'm virtually speechless.
Yeah, it's very thrilling.
Uh-huh, 3 points, yeah. Starting to get closer to a circle.
Is it precipitating in your location, Mr. Beam?
Yeah, actually it is. I'm on the West Coast now, just not far away from Eugene, Oregon, and it's really coming down. Wouldn't believe it. It's kind of a wet slush, though.
Eugene, of course, is a beautiful area.
Yeah, kind of slushy right now. You know, I was just thinking about reincarnation and how it applies not just to people and kind of life, but inanimate things too, you know, objects and social structures. You know, just kind of the idea that the most regal, the most holy can come from, you know, bottomest depth or just the sort of the dirtiest surroundings, you know, like a bishop being anointed, you know, the oil coming from a sperm whale thousands of miles away, you know, cut up on a very motley ship deck, and just kind of, you know, just kind of that idea.
Yeah, it's really like the when the seed sprouts, it could take almost any form.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, exactly. So mushrooms sprouting, you know, very regal mushroom caps, you know, full of spores, full of color and pigment, and just freshness coming from deceased matter, you know, that worms need to go through to render nourishing. Same idea.
And it's potent and it excites you and pushes you through a path which is beyond your limits. It fulfills you in a great way.
Yeah. Definitely.
A sort of conduit for creativity.
Speaking of mushrooms, they're just so interesting, and it's unbelievable how little we know about them. You know, they're not plant or animal. They really are their own life form. And just because they mostly exist underground, people just know very little about them. You know, why they even bloom, why mushrooms come above ground at one time and not another. People really have no idea.
And I really regard mushrooms as a way for self-assembly, for an organic structure.
Yeah.
To create, you know.
Yeah, the mushroom is the great synthesizer, kind of that reincarnation idea. It takes everything from different cycles of life, or kind of, I'm thinking reincarnation more of kind of status. They take things from lower and then they raise it up, only later, you know, when the mushroom decays and rots, to go back down again.
Precisely.
That's right. What if the mushroom was not made up of cells? What if it was made up of thoughts?
Yeah, well, I think that does go on. You know, physical nature has a lot of great metaphors and just kind of physically manifests a lot of ideas that just, you know, philosophies that exist in the mind as well.
And the mushroom grows from rotting tree branch that's under the ground usually.
Yeah.
So it creates this beautiful shape first by attaching itself to something that's rotting.
Mm-hmm.
you know what, I'm just thinking in terms of metaphysical or in terms of thoughts or in terms of if instead of mushroom cells,
yeah,
they were mushroom words, and they would just, the words just grow into that pattern, and another pattern. So in a
I think you're definitely getting onto something. One thing the mushroom physically manifests is kind of its distributed nature. It's a distributed life form. It's not like an animal with a central brain and limbs and a relatively local existence. It's very distributed, kind of both just in substance, but also an organization. It's like a very disconnected network, a lot like the internet. So, you know, so these mushroom words that, you know, Google has algorithms, just to use an example, that's picking up on that a little bit. So we're seeing kind of, again, this manifestation in nature being harvested and used as a technology, you know, just in a purely abstract plane, just, you know, in the ether of software running over wires, you know, bits on a wire.
Yeah, so this ability to flourish under a situation which most would consider difficult or turbulent.
But, and I think that the question that the caller raised or stated, I'm going to sue your pants off, is relevant here, because it's like it's getting harder and harder to understand who owns creation and who owns the creators.
Yeah.
And yet people need to be creative, and they need to get money for being creative, because the stores work on money, and the stores have the food. And
well, it's true. Yeah, although, you know, the internet also makes possible a very different kind of business where there is no ownership or patents or intellectual property. There's really users. If you have a lot of users, you know, you put the donate button by the login, and, you know, there's your livelihood right there.
Yes.
Right. So there are ways around this, you know, there is a new marketplace, there is a new way of initiating commerce.
That's right. And how the thoughts and the wordlessness enters into the creation of new ideas and of new thought forms, and just how it moves from one rhythm to the other. And that's what I think is so powerful about the show Music for Human Beings, because these rhythms just go on and on and on. And you know, a lot of times it's just best when we just share the rhythms. But music, you know, we try to own everything. And I think that, you know, the job as the poet has been very difficult, because they're more like the brick mason who builds houses for thoughts with words. And now those words can grow organically in other forms. So it's a complicated question.
Yeah, but that's a very good metaphor there. That's a very excellent image, because the concept beginning, you know, is very amorphous and sort of fluttering through the air as a gas. And suddenly, when the concept is assigned a word, its nature changes abruptly. You know, despite our effort to select a word which captures the flavor or the texture of the concept, it changes, because suddenly there is a word associated with it, and all these other things begin to become associated with that concept. But the beautiful thing about poetry is that the word can regain some of this formlessness, some of this amorphicity.
Yes. Is there an open source poetry movement?
A free poetry movement.
The free poetry movement, where people just write poetry back and forth, and they don't try to own it, just like they write software?
Well, I'm not too well-versed in the licensing issues there, but perhaps the gentleman, the lovely gentleman who threatened to sue us earlier, might be willing to offer some legal bearing on this issue.
Well, just the rhythm of his word and the intensity. Is Rainbow Beam still on?
Oh, it sounds like we've lost Brother Arthur.
Oh, my goodness. I think he would know the answer to these questions or know the directions to look.
Yeah, alas, I think we've lost Mr. Beam to the mysterious waves.
Well, my thinking is that words representing thoughts are so powerful that they can change the direction of a thought, which changes the direction of the universe. Can change the direction of the universe. So it's kind of like a photon. Is a photon a particle, or is it a wave?
Well, it's a particle.
Hello?
Oh, well, hello, welcome to the air. Our operator put you on without indicating this. Welcome.
Oh, I hope that's okay.
No, of course, it's more than okay. It's.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I was listening when you were talking to the caller who called and was upset about you're appropriating his poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I felt that at least you did owe him a sincere apology. He had written it and you had claimed it as your own.
Certainly. Well, let me explain the situation to our callers and to our listeners who may perhaps were not with us last week. The poem in question was actually written by one Robert Frost, and so who unfortunately is no longer with us on the earth plane. So naturally, the caller who donated this poem to us, in saying that he was the author, meant this only figuratively, and so we honored him and Robert Frost last week by having our own ordained light minister compounding this plagiarism by also claiming authorship.
Well, perhaps there was part of the poem or something that was his. That was the impression I got. And it does change it. So I just think that he should be given credit.
So I'm personally Robert Frost?
No, the guy who changed it and wrote it in. And, maybe not totally his, but it certainly wouldn't be yours, right?
No. Certainly, it's only as much ours as it is his.
Okay, so I think that should be said, to give credit for him and an apology.
Certainly. We apologize to Robert Frost on our behalf and on behalf
of
the...
You're very stubborn.
...of the caller.
Well, I don't think you heard me. I mean, this is the guy who wrote a little bit of poetry.
No, I understand. I think I'm hearing more than your words. I'm also hearing your meaning. And your meaning, I believe, is that we should be fair.
Yeah, exactly.
And we love to be fair on Music for Human Beings.
Well, I should hope so.
Certainly.
Okay. Thank you.
No, sir, stay with us.
Am I going to hear an apology?
I'm sorry?
Am I going to hear an apology to him?
To our caller earlier?
Yeah.
I certainly apologize for the confusion, but...
Wait. Now, what's making it hard for you to just say, I'm sorry we appropriated some of your words?
He didn't even say it. It was Les Woods that said it. So why are you giving him a hard time?
So let's be straightforward. The poem in its entirety belongs to Robert Frost, not to any of us. It belongs to any of us equally. aside from Robert Frost, who actually authored the poem.
Did he write a little bit of anything?
No, not at all. It was plagiarized verbatim. So I apologize to everyone else for the confusion, but when Lester Woods last week read the poem, it was assumed that everyone would instantly realize that it was simply an homage to Robert Frost and not intended in any way to offend anyone.
Well, if he didn't change anything, then I understand what you're saying. But if he did, I do think you owe him an apology.
He did not. So but the poem is available if anyone would like to hear it again.
Okay.
But thank you all for your call.
Yes. Thank you for your show.
Well, thank you. I mean, stay with us. We have two lines.
It's just wonderful to talk about the power of words, which leads us into the power of thought, which leads us into the power of something deeper, perhaps feelings, perhaps knowing, perhaps being. And the discussion of who owns even you know, my feeling is that this fellow who thinks he owns the poem that Les Wood thinks Robert Frost owns is that, you know, he's changed it just by adding his story to it. And so, in effect, with that caller, I went down the road more traveled.
Yeah, and I really understand this too. It's a very excellent metaphor. It's like perhaps analogous to a plant. It's a plant takes the sunlight and the water and the earth. And all of these things are intangible, they are all conceptual, and it forms into fruit, something that a hungry person could reach out and grab and perhaps eat.
Yes.
So, caller, stick with us where my operator indicates another call.
Absolutely.
Welcome to Music for Human.
Hello. This is Alex, and I called earlier, and we were talking about sewing pants, and I appreciated the discussion that was going on before, and I'm willing to make an offer to you. I'd like to read one of my own poems, and I think if I'm able to do that, and give it proper credit, then I think our problem will be over.
Well, Alex, we're always welcome original art on our show.
And what I'd like to offer to it, as he's reading, instead of suing the pants off, I'm just going to take my pants off in homage.
Thank you.
Well, I think that would be a profound gesture, and I will join you in the removal of clothes.
Well, good. I wasn't wearing clothes when I called in, so this is good. Here we go. This poem is called Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening by Alex Vance. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there's some mistake. The only other sound's the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep, but I have promises to keep, and miles to go before I sleep, and miles to go before I meditate. By Alex Vance.
Wow.
So that's really beautiful. Another homage to Robert Frost.
No, actually, that was all mine. So.
Well, the last word was yours.
Right. Well, the poem was mine.
The last word of the poem was yours.
Thank you.
But we really appreciate the performance.
Yes, I enjoyed performing my poetry.
And the change, which was subtle but significant. I mean, I understand there is a lot of symbolism in the change of that last word from sleep to meditate.
Well, I think everybody, bar none, reveres Robert Frost, but, you know, that is a revision, an addition to that poem, which can endure like timeless change. And an algorithm of the road less traveled. I don't think Robert Frost would have... I think he would have appreciated that.
I just saw this movie, Frost Nixon. So you're talking about this man who interviewed Richard Nixon. He was also a poet?
That was David Frost.
Okay. And you're talking about the man from Iron Man?
But what I think could have happened in this instance is, through a wormhole in time, this poem that you have written could have gone back in time to when Robert Frost was in the snow and writing poems, and he changed your poem into his poem.
And I changed his poem into my poem. Maybe that's what happened.
He changed your poem into his poem, and now we're just coming full circle.
That's beautiful. You know, I actually have, I've been on a couple of journeys to places in my mind where I have talked to various past poets and animalistic poets and musicians, bards. And I don't remember most of what happened. Sorry, what was that?
Heliotropes and psychopomps.
Exactly. And usually when I come out of that, my nose is bleeding and I don't remember anything, but I'll have thousands of books of manuscript written out in longhand. Most of that is legible and words. So that's where this came from. So that's what happened.
I think we're in the pure quantum physics now.
Yeah. Have you seen the movie What the Fuck Do We Know?
I've seen What the Bleep Do We Know.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm afraid we're not allowed to utter obscenities on the air. So.
And he didn't really utter it, he said it.
Yeah, the rules, you know, we don't make up the rules, but we have another caller, fortunately.
I'd like to apologize for him.
Hello, you are on the air?
I don't think he needs to, but...
It's pretty much all meaningless anyways, but... I was about to say a few different things that could be jokes in a few different ways, but... It's pretty pointless to joke because words are pretty pointless and meaningless and don't really add up to anything. I mean, if you add every word up together, then that's something that's not really anything. You know what's annoying? When you're breathing good and someone talks, and then you gotta respond and it's like off your breathing pattern.
Wow. Wow, I'm blown away.
Lots of people like to throw paint. My friend went to high school art, and then I learned everything from my friend. We kept our heads real close together.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for another glorious hour on the air. Unfortunately, our time has come to a close.
Thank you. My soul is totally uplifted.
As is mine, sir. So, again, thank you for calling in. And to our last caller, I'm sorry we have to cut it so short. But as I say, time is always against us.
Yes,
They're always getting police.
Always the police.
We got police. Can we police? But my friends are police. Hey guys. Goodbye.
All right. So, my salama.
I can actually feel the time pushing me right now.
And it sort of pushes us out. So, anyway, my salama from Dr. Jalas Sakran. Thank you for listening to Music for Human. We are on 7 p.m. every Friday here on WMBR 88.1 FM in Cambridge. Stay tuned for Hidden Gems in Plain Sight. My salama.